Chris Bain, you're the director of CAFOD, and you're here marking the 50th anniversary of an organisation that was born exactly as Vatican II was opening its doors.
That's right. The bishops of England and Wales congregated in the Venerable English College in October 1962, and they had heard or they'd been witnessing the work of Catholic women in England and Wales who were organising family fast days where parishes and communities and schools gave up a meal and then donated that to the work overseas, to in particular the programmes in the Caribbean, church programmes. And they thought this was a wonderful idea, and they decided to sort of institute it as an agency of the church. And CAFOD was born, and 50 years later, sitting here in the English Venerable College in 2012, we're here to celebrate through a commemorative mass that sort of, you know, auspicious occasion 50 years ago.
Started, as you say, by pioneering Catholic women. Is it still true to say, do you think, that women are providing a pioneering vision for the organisation today?
Oh, I think so. I think all the sort of the work in the parishes, women are a key part of the volunteer force. The church relies upon volunteers, CAFOD relies upon volunteers to raise the awareness, to raise the funds, and women would be a driving force of that vision. And obviously within the staff of CAFOD, there would be women shaping programmes in West Africa, in Latin America, and working also with congregations. Many of the women religious, for example, working in these areas would be partners of CAFOD as well. So no, I would say that I still say that, you know, CAFOD is a women's organisation of the church, doing the church's work.
Let's look at the areas where you work, and particularly what you see as the most important part of the work today. Is it emergency disaster response? Is it long-term development, or is it perhaps more a drive to change the structures that keep people in poverty today?
CAFOD's mission always encompasses all activities which are about tackling injustice and extreme poverty. So about a third of our work is in extreme emergency situations. But I always make the point here that the very first people on the ground in Asia, Latin America, Africa, when these emergencies happen, are the church people. It's the pastors and the priests and the catechists and the lay people of the church who are on the ground in those emergencies. And what we do as CAFOD is support those, come in, provide them financial and technical support to deliver emergency assistance. That's about a third of our work.
So it's really the local church, you're saying, is the first response to those disasters?
Absolutely, always. And the church globally should be proud of the fact that they are there on the spot. The Catholic Church can reach places where others can't. You know, we're in those mission stations, right in the borders, right down those rivers. I take my bishops from England and Wales on trips, and we're doing 5 or 6 hour car rides to get to these stations. And I'm saying, well, we're not working near the towns. We're not working near the airports. We're where the church is. We're where the need is. And that's in the middle of nowhere. And the church is found in the middle of nowhere.
So that's the emergency response aspect. But advocacy is as important today, isn't it? Changing structures of injustice.
I think that's the case. And that's a very clear message, for example, from the Holy Father's encyclical Caritas in Veritate, that we have to be mindful of what is keeping people in absolute poverty, what is keeping people from not exercising their basic rights. And much of our work is also challenging governments, challenging companies, challenging institutions to look at what they're doing and saying, are you doing enough to tackle the root causes of poverty? And that work in advocacy is made credible by CAFOD and other parts of CIDSE and Caritas, the work they do in sustainable development, in this long-term development, which is about two-thirds of our work. And as the church believes that this development isn't just about material issues, we call it authentic human development, human flourishing, true development, this holistic sense of the body and the soul. But that's the important part. So that work feeds and gives credibility to the challenging of those powers and principalities to change their policies on behalf of the poor.
This kind of vision that you're talking about, this holistic vision, was very much at the heart of a 1971 Synod of Bishops, wasn't it, called Justice in the World. And yet there seems to have been, according to many since then, a growing tension between, if you like, the church doctrine and its social teaching. Do you experience that yourself?
I think it's overplayed. I think that if we're listening to for example, the words of the Holy Father in Deus Caritas Est and in Caritas in Veritate recently, and Blessed John Paul II in Solicitude Rei Socialis beforehand, you unequivocally get this sense that the Church has got to be about seeking justice. The issue is, and I think where we've learned a lot, is that this has to be rooted in God's love. This idea of love and justice coming together, I think, must shape the work we're doing. And I believe that some of the tensions that may have been presented between justice and charity are not there if we see the two going together. And that would be Cafod's understanding, that we see those two dimensions of God's love and God's justice expressed in our work. I'm always mindful, again, this sort of sense that the Church's mission has got the preaching of the word, the experiencing and the celebrating of the sacraments, and it's got serving the poor as the third pillar. And those three in balance, I think, is what we'd like to see, for example, the Year of the Faith, the new evangelization, see as this holistic Church's response in the world today.
And yet Cafod has experienced some difficulties in the past, seeking to maintain this true Catholic identity, if you like, rooted in the faith of the Church, particularly when you're working with other organizations that don't share your faith or vision.
I think that's true. And like many parts of the Church, particularly a church in England and Wales, which is a minority church where Catholics are a very small part of the population, we are working with others who would not share all of our beliefs and our understandings. But again, I'm very, very mindful of the Church tradition, which says that we do work in the world. You know, since Gaudium et Spes, we are actually in the world. We're rolling up our sleeves, getting in that messiness. And we, in that situation, we need to be true to our identity. And we need to work with others, even if they don't always agree with us, as long as we're clear that we are not supporting some of their particular policies or the way they do things, and we're true to our experience as Catholic agencies.
Just like to look a little bit about some of the statistics you're quoting about the situation of poverty in the world. You're talking about an extra 100 million people who have dropped into extreme poverty because of the current global recession. Where does this leave us in terms of that Millennium Development Goal of halving the number of people in poverty by 2015?
Well, the truth is that when it comes to 2015, it might be that the number of people living in absolute poverty may have been halved. But that won't be true for the billion who are still in extreme poverty in India, in South America, in sub-Saharan Africa. What we're finding is that whereas we may have had some good impact on health and education and poverty, we are living in the most unequal world we've ever lived in. And so what's happening is that the poorest are being left behind. So the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer. And one of the challenges for Catholic agencies like Cafod is to address that inequality and to try to focus our work on the very, very poorest in the world so that we are talking about eliminating extreme poverty as being a sort of legitimate goal, eliminating hunger, because we live in a world where that equality manifests itself in the people we're working with every day. The Church on the ground in Africa and Asia and Latin America are experiencing every day. It's got to be a real challenge for us.
What do you see as the greatest success, if you like, over the past 50 years, particularly in this work, which seems sometimes to be an uphill struggle?
There have no doubt been examples of where we have addressed poverty and poverty has been tackled. So I think you can find that everywhere. But the consequence has been for all those that have moved from poverty that the others left behind are harder to reach. So I think we can celebrate a greater health, we can celebrate more children in more primary children in school, but it cannot be enough. The other thing we can also, I think, celebrate over the 50 years is, I think, this awareness as we move towards, if you like, a new generation of Millennium Goals from 2015 onwards, that the whole world, that we're one human family, as the Church has always said, we're all God's children. And we've all got a responsibility, whether you're living in Baltimore or whether you're living in Beijing or whether you're living in Brixton, London, we've all got a responsibility for ensuring that the least of God's people are out of extreme poverty and have food and shelter and water and homes.
It must be difficult for you personally sometimes keeping this vision alive, I imagine. Can you tell us a couple of stories as to where you draw most of your inspiration from in this work?
Well, I'm in that privileged position that I can actually visit the work that CAFOR does with our church partners, our Caritas partners around the world. And I think if there's some words that I use in these travels, I think this whole concept of human dignity, of how we're working with the church to bring people into fully flourishing lives where they can exercise that dignity. And I remember being in northern Uganda, in Gulu, a few years ago with our chair bishop, Bishop John Arnold from Westminster. And we met a woman who had for 15 years lived in a refugee camp. The war in northern Uganda had meant that she had to live on food aid and live on support. Her children were growing up in this situation of dependency. And through the church there, Caritas Gulu, we were working on a program of rehabilitating her land, which was right away on the Sudan border, teaching the new communities that she was with, new farming methods, rebuilding homes. And we visited her about 9 months after this program had started, and she was sitting with the people in the field of cassava. They'd just harvested the cassava, they'd sold some in the market, and because we're also about thinking about the future, not just about subsistence, she had put some of the money that she'd bought into a bank account, and the Caritas people had helped her with a bank account. And there she was with a bank account, had about 80 shillings in it, which is about a pound sterling. And this wasn't a statement of money or wealth. This, holding the book up with perhaps a bit of a tear in her eye, certainly a tear in my eye, was a statement of human dignity. Here is someone who for 15 years had lived on the charity of others, had lived on food aid, for the first time was actually saying, I and my family can now live and be subsistent, and we can pay for the school fees and pay for the health and pay for the education. I have my dignity back. And I think that's what we're about, bringing human dignity, transforming the lives of people like Josephine, her name was, so that she can and her family can have fully flourishing lives in the future.